Hey, welcome to the new CNADHD podcast. I'm your host, Liz Lewis, and I don't want to produce another boring podcast.
I don't know if you've noticed this, but if you go in iTunes, there are like 100 podcasts now about ADHD. Seriously, do it. Look, you'll be shocked. And I don't want to do the same thing that everybody else is doing. The CNADHD podcast is your place to get the best information and hear from the best experts in the field of ADHD. I take all this information and I make it understandable, actionable, and hopefully a little fun. It does not suck.
Welcome, welcome to episode 313 of the CNADHD podcast. I'm pretty stoked about today's guest. I have Dr. Michelle Frank. Her partner is Sari Solden. You might have heard of her. I'm thinking you probably have. They have a book coming out called A Radical Guide for Women with ADHD. So I invited Dr. Frank to come on and talk to me, and we talked about everything from is ADHD a gift to our relationships to the need for therapy and the need to do the work. It's a really great conversation. I probably should have given Dr. Frank my insurance information because I basically got a therapy session out of this. No, really, I did. But anyway, with that, I give you the wonderful, brilliant Dr. Michelle Frank.
Welcome to the show, Dr. Michelle Frank. Do you prefer that I call you Dr. Frank, Dr. Michelle? What do you like to be called?
A lot of people call me Dr. Frank, but you can call me Michelle. You can call me Dr. Frank. Whatever works.
Well, first I cyberstalked your associate, Sari Solden, who most people know how to cyberstalk Sari.
Yes. She's kind of famous.
So, and then I found you and I was like, oh, I was like, there's an associate, you know, I got all excited. And then I think didn't I bug you or something on social media?
Yeah, you messaged me on Instagram, yeah.
That's right. Because when I messaged you, I said, this is the worst pitch ever. That's what I said. Yeah. I think I did it in the car line after school.
Nice.
Yeah.
But you had been doing, you know, a lot of the healthy ADHD stuff, you know, awareness online and helping out with ADA some. So we're both connected to ADA too.
I try. I try. Yeah. And then I just inherited a podcast. I reached out to you because I knew you had a book coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what, one of the things I think everybody loved about the original book was that it put a lot of things into words that are hard to talk about. And I think this book is going to do the same thing. And I'm super excited about it. Like I told the girls in my community, we're going to do a reading. I'm going to do a giveaway. Like we're going to do all awesome. This stuff about this book. But I think that's what makes this so big. Like having this conversation is so important because there are so many things that women living with ADHD, we can't quantify it. We can't put it into words. And I'm hoping that this helps us. And some of the exercises in the book, I'm hoping that this helps.
Yeah.
I just have to ask your opinion. Is ADHD a gift? It's just an opinion question.
You know. So, you know, like any psychologist, my answer to every question is, it depends, right? What would you say? What do you think about that, right? But it's rhetorical, right? Because I think every person has their own right answer to that question. And, you know, my perspective is that some moments it's a gift, some moments it's a curse in my personal life for me. You know, at the same time, ADHD, especially when it's not properly supported and managed, can be so disabling. I mean, it can hijack your entire life, your relationships, I mean, you know, everything. And so it is disabling. It does meet criteria for a disability, you know, per the ADA, and it is a documented brain-based neurobehavioral condition. So, you know, personally, I do often see it as an invisible condition, syndrome, disability. But I think it's important for each person to decide what the heck that means for them in the first place. Because for some folks, viewing ADHD as a gift is really hard because it feels so invalidating of their struggles. And so when people say that, they They feel invalidated. They feel dismissed. They, you know, and it just, I think, triggers those old emotional wounds and sense of being so alone and misunderstood. For other people, the word disability triggers all of that. And so the answer is, I think, it probably depends on the moment, on the day, you know, how much ADHD symptoms are getting in your way. What we do know for sure is the brain-based difference, and it's a lifelong condition for many. It's chronic. So I'm not sure that the, you know, the argument, I think it's a moot point. I think what matters most is that whatever belief system you choose, whatever language you use, that those thoughts, that belief system, those words are validating, and they help you make sense of your experience, and they help you propel your life forward. They don't stifle you. They don't disempower you. They don't leave you with a mentality of either carelessness and I don't have to try, nor do they leave you with complete victimization. So I think to each their own in terms of how they choose to see that. I was at a panel a few years back. I think it was the Orlando conference. And Sari was on a panel with Ned Hollowell on one side and Tom Brown on the other. And so Ned is the, you know, perpetual idealist, and Tom is a realist. He's, you know, then you go to like Barclay, who's like, mm-hmm. in his keynote presentation this past year was, y'all aren't going to live very long.
Basically. Well, I like, love that presentation.
It's great because it's factual, and it brings out the, you know, the severity, the truth that we need to take this seriously.
I think a lot of people. Barclay, a lot of people, I guess it rubs people, but I loved what he said was, I would rather scare the crap out of you and get you into treatment.
Yeah.
Than just ignore it.
Right.
Than have you ignore right. it. So, yeah. And I like Tom Brown too.
Yeah. I mean, they all, you know, each of these specialists have their own perspective, and they add different things to the field. So Sari's there in between, Brown and Ned, and Brown and Ned's, you know, going into his ADHD is a superpower, it's a gift stuff. And then, you know, on the other side, Tom Brown is saying, well, yes, but it's also, you know, we need to give people realistic hope, which is the camp I'm in, because you can't tell someone who has a significant cognitive delay that they're going to be a NASA engineer. That's not fair, but it's also neither good nor bad. They can be the best of what they can be, and it's very neutral, you know, but we put sort of some judgment on it. And so he's more in the realistic hope, and then Ned keeps going on about how we have to see the positives because the deficit model can be so disempowering, and Sari is there. Literally, I wish you could just see her head's going back and forth, back and forth. She kind of sinks down into her chair, looks up at me, and just smiles, you know, like, because that is the debate in the field and among people who have it. And I think it doesn't matter. It is the belief you have about your condition and your differences. Just like if you had fibromyalgia, diabetes, you know, a chronic pain condition, MS, how you view those things impacts how well you live with them. And for one person, the word disability is freeing, and it is validating, and it gives them a sense of strength and unity in a community. And for other people, it feels like judgment and shame and stigma. And so you need to choose the belief that serves you best. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I do think ADHD needs to be viewed as a chronic condition, mm-hmm. and respected that way. You know,
well, if you ignored your diabetes, what are the other ones you named? If you ignored your diabetes, your MS,
yeah.
you know, that would be really bad. To just ignore diabetes, yeah. and not treat it, not watch right. your blood sugar, that would be bad. So right. there are huge consequences to doing that. And I think ADHD in a lot of ways is the same. If it goes unacknowledged,
right, and
untreated, yes, it is. Yeah. Well, it's also a public health issue.
Yes.
In a lot of ways, that's a public health issue. But I just think it doesn't have to be black and white. And you exactly. mentioned the black and white thing. before I even hit record, I think, well, in ADHD people, we can be very black and white and inflexible in our thinking. And maybe that's why that's such a big, I don't know what to call it, that's such a big argument within the and even within all of us, like those of us that create content around ADHD, I think we probably all disagree at different times about what it is. And
yeah, absolutely. I mean, a wise man knows he knows nothing at all, right? So we're all figuring out as we go. But what we do know, and Russ Ramsey has a lot of good research on thought patterns of people with ADHD. You know, in psychology, we talk about what's called cognitive distortions, which is really just unhelpful thought patterns. You know, it's the way that we misperceive things and distort, we catastrophize, we go to all or nothing thinking, black or white thinking, all of these things are called cognitive distortions. And people with ADHD have a lot of cognitive distortions. They have a lot of unhelpful thoughts. The frequency of them is higher, you know, than in the non-ADHD control. The impact is worse. You know, thoughts, feelings, and behaviors are all go together. You can't separate any of this. And so I think a tendency, it's interesting because it mirrors, right, like the hyper arousal patterns in the ADHD brain, 0 to 100, you know, all on or all off. So it's interesting sometimes to me that even the way that we perceive the world, like we've got to be all in or it's not good enough. You know, it's good or we're bad based on if we're having a symptom that leads to a shame spiral, then all of a sudden we see ourselves as all bad, you know. Or if we have a good day, then good. And we have trouble sometimes, all of us as human beings, living in the gray area because our brains really like things to be boxed into categories to make sense of the world, what's safe, what's not. But, you know, certainly I think it's like a psychological byproduct of ADHD life to develop some of these patterns of thought and belief systems that, you know, seemingly protect us in some ways, but actually really sabotage us.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. Like, what kind of belief systems are you, in your practice, what kind of limiting beliefs and stuff do you see? Like, do you think most commonly affect women?
Oh, wow. I think it boils down to, I'm too much and I'm not enough. In so many ways. I'm not good enough. I am not worthy of love and success. I am irresponsible. I am, you know, not good enough as a friend, partner, mother, you know, colleague. It, so much of it, I think, goes straight to the core of, am I good and worthy or not? It starts with, you know, I'm messy. You know, my desk is a mess. It goes to, I am messy. It goes to, messy means I am a bad, you know, colleague. I am, you know, my spouse doesn't like how messy I am. So, you know, I am a bad partner. I can't find my kids' permission slip. I am a bad mother. And so my desk looks is messy, goes like all spirals so quickly down to I'm just bad at life, right? And it happens so fast and so automatically. You know, Siri and I talk a lot about default positions. It's like over time that just becomes the quick automatic thought response. Goes from my desk is a mess to I'm bad at everything. So a lot of the work we do is really working on creating space and pausing long enough to start to move away from that spiral. Sometimes that involves processing what's underneath it, you know, the deep dive into the emotional wounds of ADHD life. In fact, I find that if you don't do that work, then strategies are often going to backfire because you're going to be, you know, trying to fit yourself into the box of acting as if you don't have ADHD when you do. and not treating yourself and choosing the right supports based on like self-love and compassion, you're going to be using criticism and, you know, more like of a punitive attitude to how you address your symptoms. So, you know, we have to sort of untangle a lot of these deep emotional wounds that women with ADHD have and have lived with for a long time. And then I think it's also about creating space within the thoughts themselves. Like, there's a big difference between, wow, I'm having the, you know, that old story is popping up. Okay, I'm having the thought that I'm a bad mom. That's very different from I am a bad mom. One is totally fused with a very radical catastrophizing thought, and that thought is going to trigger a very strong negative emotional response. The other is more of an observation where you feel it, you think it, but there's still a part of you that's like the observing self, the adult self that's there to say, okay, what are we going to do with this? What do I need in this moment to prevent the all, you know, the meltdown, the shame meltdown? And so we want to create that space. But a lot of times in ADHD treatment, what we found is that the deeper dive is ignored because even clinicians get stuck in colluding with this desire to fix the symptoms. You know, I don't know what you think, but...
Well, you know, I was thinking, as you were talking, like, I totally agree. And I think when you said the permission slip thing, I think a lot of us will... Yes, you forget a permission slip and the immediate thought is I'm a bad mom. Or maybe for me, it's not always I'm a bad mom. It's more like I am a flake.
There you go. Right.
I'm a flake and I have been my entire life. Like I'm just like the issue, like for me, the issue is in the middle of all of it. Obviously we can't just like call up a therapist to get an appointment. Oh, mm-hmm. I forgot my kid's permission slip. Yeah. But it's in that moment. You know, it's almost like you were talking, I forget what you called it, the automatic thoughts. Mm-hmm. Once that starts, the awareness that it started, like you have to know when it's happening. Mm-hmm. Or, no, like you have to know and you have to get some control over it. And I'm just not sure in the moment. And we talk about this all the time in my group, like someone will come in and tell a story about a meltdown that they just had in the middle of the day or with their kids or whatever. And really nobody knows what to do.
Right.
You know, it just happens and it's there. There's no getting around it. I mean, it's not, and then you don't want to share it with anybody. Like, or if you do share it, somebody's going to go, like, is that the biggest problem in your life? Like, really? It's not, I don't, it's so hard to explain, but once it starts, I don't know how somebody pulls themselves back from it. And how do you even know? I mean, most people, their level of awareness day to day isn't even there.
Yeah.
Is that like, is that something discussed in the book that how to bring awareness to it?
Yeah. How to bring awareness to it in the moment. And I think, you know, the simple answer is pausing, taking a moment, taking a breath, checking in with yourself. You know, we talk about what we call an authenticity scan in the book, and there are exercises for how to do that. But I think, you know, even the more important part is you can have all the awareness in the world, but a lot of people then say, well, great, I know this, but now I just am more aware of what hurts. Mm-hmm. How do I help it? Because now I'm just more focused on it. And so sometimes the beginning stages of awareness do bring about a little more pain at first, because now you're aware of the pain that you were maybe just pushing through, ignoring, repressing, denying, whatever, and numbing out. You've got to feel it. And then you've got to start to work with it differently in those moments.
And then numbing out, you just said numbing out. And I think that tends to be the default.
Oh, for sure.
Like the people that I know or work with, that I hear this all the time. The immediate, it's terrible, but the default tends to be like, you grab the phone.
Yep.
And I don't know, it's scrolling or whatever you're doing. And that numbing out thing, ooh, I don't even know. How do you get around that? I don't.
Right, because it takes you out of your life, right? Yes. You know, what we know about the ADHD brain is that emotional dysregulation is part of the condition, and that we're more prone to amygdala overload, right? Where our emotional brain really gets hijacked a lot easier. It gets overwhelmed, and, you know, you can go 0 to 100 with emotion really quickly. People with ADHD are known to be a bit more on the sensitive side. And so really then you do what, you know, anyone does when they're emotionally flooded, which is take space, take time, because you literally cannot access your rational brain when your emotional brain is hijacked. All of your brain's resources are going to the emotional brain and dealing with that. And there's very little happening, you know, within the frontal lobe until you pause and get the emotional brain down, because your adrenal system is going crazy. Your stress hormones are up. Everything's just moving into fight or flight so quickly. And that happens if your kid has a meltdown at the grocery store and it's like the last straw of the day, you know, or if you get a late fee, you know, for whatever, for a parking ticket that you forgot to pay. And again, that's the last straw of the day. You lose your keys. Anything can really trigger this. Typically, there's like a period where of buildup too. So it's important to look sort of at, I did this course on basically on mindful living, and we talked a lot about listening to the whispers, you know, before they get to screams. I think it's hard for the ADHD brain because it requires, you know, attention and slowing down, which is not always easy. But so back to the emotional dysregulation piece, you know, it's, you have to address, you have to care for your nervous system. You have, it's, so it really comes down to having a relationship with yourself and your body and your brain, saying, okay, what do I need now? Because if I'm in total meltdown mode, then I need to deal with that. Otherwise, there's no way I'm going to be able to move into the world with intention and take care of other people and take care of myself. And so it's a lot of grounding. It's a lot of emotional regulation techniques, self-soothing.
Oh yeah, we're not good self-soothing. Stuff like that.
No. Right, because, you know, that's a, it's not immediate gratification. Mm-hmm. It, and also I think when the emotional brain is so dysregulated and so hijacked, it's hard to access your tools, you know, because like I said, your rational brain is not up to bat. You know, I think having, you know, a toolbox sort of at the ready and having some rituals around things you do in these situations is helpful. But another important piece of it is allowing yourself to have emotions in the first place. I think a lot of people in general are afraid of having feelings.
Oh yeah.
You know, and with ADHD, you're just afraid. You're afraid of a lot of your own experience, and you distrust your ability to get back in the driver's seat and in control. You distrust your ability to regulate, to follow through. And so
I hit a lot of, I mean, my husband knew I had ADHD. I didn't hide it from him. But after our son was born, I did, I really didn't want him to know how miserable I was, I guess it was probably the first 6 months or so. I felt like, he's getting up and going to work every day, and I don't want to bother him with this. And really didn't want him to know that I was really struggling with the baby and being on my own and not having a job anymore. Yeah. And just like all those things, I was really struggling with that. And I don't want to stereotype or something, but I think for women, mm-hmm. It tends to be relational, and we do tend to avoid the parts of ourselves that, well, we've been socialized that aren't okay. Like the fact that I was a new mom and I had what a lot of people would love to have, you know, a stay-at-home mom. And I got to do whatever, you know, all my time was my own with my baby. Yeah. And I felt really ungrateful. Like I felt, yeah, to tell anybody that I hated
yeah,
life, like would have been, and I would have been judged for it. In fact, I was like, by when I tried to talk to my mom about it, even,
yeah,
you know, and like people were just like, what's your problem? And so I wasn't going to tell my husband. And for women, I think that there's these gender expectations and things we expect from ourselves too.
Yeah. I mean,
do you agree?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I can't tell you how many times I've heard, you know, women disclose that, you know, to me in therapy, this, the same experience, and no one really talks about it. Because, you know, we are primed to nurture. We're socialized to believe that caring for others and nurturing others is really our primary role in life. And I think we're still dealing with that. We're still wondering what it means to be authentic in our gender identity and in the roles that we choose up against some really rigid perfectionistic expectations that are out there. Yeah, I think it's interesting. One, I mean, like, just think of all of the executive functioning skills it takes to be a mom. I mean, it's a lot, you know. It's planning, it's time management, it's memory, it's sequencing of behavior over time. It's, you know, it's all of these things that are naturally hard for the ADHD brain. It, you know, frankly, just, it sucks for women to feel like there's this, you know, thing that I really want to do. I really want to be good at this. I value this. I want to nurture. I love nurturing because all human beings,
be a good mom.
Yeah, exactly. And all human beings have a need to nurture and create, right? So, but I can't, even though I want to, because my brain won't let me. So I don't even get to choose which gender roles, you know, are authentic for me to fulfill or not, because, you know, even if I do want to be, you know, present as more traditionally feminine in terms of the social roles and, right, you know, regulations that are prescribed, my brain won't show up for me to do those things. And so for some women, the escape is at work. And for other women, it's the opposite. The escape is at home. I think it depends too on how much support you have, what kind of support you have. But one thing I also noticed from your story that I hear a lot is the go it alone mentality, the push through, you know, just push through and, you know, don't let them see you sweat.
It's so funny you say that, because it made me remember that when I got sick in the hospital. And so I had to stay in the hospital for 5 days after he was born. He was fine. I was sick. But on like the third or fourth day, I told my husband to go to work, because I was like, well, they'll bring the baby, like the baby just stays with you in the room all the time at the hospital anyway. And I was like, I'm going to have to do it by myself at home. So you might as well go to the office.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he did, because I told him to. I mean, he wouldn't have if I hadn't told him to, but he did. And I stayed in the hospital all day by myself with this screaming baby. And I actually thought it'd be better when I went home. But yeah, like first of all, I did not take medication in my 20s. And then, but the thing was, because I was working and it was just me, I only had to manage me. So I had very, well, talk about rigid. I had very rigid, you know, structures with my time. And, you know, I got things done at work. I didn't want to get fired. So like I got done what I had to get done. And once I had that baby, you can't take a baby and stuff them into your very like rigid.
Right.
And so all the systems I built up to deal with my ADHD stuff, all those systems kind of went out the window. And plus you have hormonal things happen after you have a baby. And so I was a mess. But I didn't want anyone to know. Like I went home from the hospital and like didn't want to tell anybody. I went back to the gym in like 6 or 8 weeks, which was crazy. But I felt very much like surrounded by women who were working out. And like, I was just like, oh, okay, this is what you do.
This is what you do.
This is what you do. And, you know, and I didn't want anyone to come to my house, because I also wasn't able to, I had all these pictures in my mind of my baby sleeping in the afternoon, napping, and I would be able to clean, or, oh, I can go to the farmer's market and make good meals and stuff. And it was so stupid. Like, really? No, none of that was going to happen.
The fantasy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Sari and I often talk about like, get out of your room and into your life, that so many women with ADHD don't have friends over, family over. They're afraid, like they stay after hours at work, cleaning up their desk, shoving things in drawers, because they literally don't want people to see the mess. But oftentimes that means a lot more emotionally underneath. They figuratively, like emotionally, don't want people to see, quote, the mess, right? They're afraid of being seen.
Yeah.
Women with ADHD are afraid of being seen. One of the biggest coping mechanisms that we find women with ADHD use is hiding. They hide away, they isolate, they make their lives smaller. They try to fit into these boxes, do the things, just do the things I'm supposed, this is what I'm supposed to do, right? And, you know, if I can hide all evidence of having ADHD, then maybe everything will be okay. Mm-hmm. The thing is, you have ADHD. It's like even women who I've found who are okay, you know, talking about ADHD, they've made peace with the diagnosis itself. still struggle when they have ADHD moments or days. It's like, so, okay, so you can have ADHD on paper, but not in real life. You know, it's a lot harder because it's hard and it hurts and it's messy and it's chaotic and it feels sometimes, you know, devastating and like weakness and lonely. The problem then is that the compulsion for self-protection then can lead to hiding, you know, keeping the vulnerability inside when that only makes things worse, you know, because we need that social support and we need to ask for help. It's in our book, we have a declaration of independence for women with ADHD because we found that there are certain like just basic rights, human rights that women with ADHD seem to be vulnerable. And I would argue like women with other chronic conditions or mental health conditions are vulnerable to letting go of and one of them is like, you have the right to ask for help. You know, you have the right to connection. You have the right to say no to toxic help. Right. Like I hear a lot of stories too of like women's mothers coming over, their friends coming over to help with the new baby and they want the help. They need the help with the house or whatever, taking care of the kid, but then they get criticized for everything they do. Well, is that help? If at the end of the day, you're in a ball crying and feel, you know, like a terrible person, that ain't help, you know, but it's hard to set those boundaries. It's hard to even know those boundaries exist. And that it's okay to set them when your whole life you've really internalized the message that your way of being in the world is wrong. And so you're the one that has the problem.
Yep.
So you're the one that has to fix it. Well, we all have struggles. We all have challenges. We all have differences. And some of them are harder than others and they are not fair, but they are what they are. But that doesn't mean that it's okay for other people to berate us. And maybe more importantly, for us to berate ourselves and deny ourselves these basic human needs, support, connection, all of that.
I'm so lucky my mother doesn't listen or read any of my work. I'm really lucky because
I always wonder about that. You know, like in people's memoirs where they just like out everything. I'm like, wow.
Oh, if I had a memoir, she would be. Oh, she'd
be all over it. Anymore.
I had a mom who thought she was helping me, that would come over and she was kind of, it's like she was helping me, but like you were saying, it was kind of toxic. Like she would just be like, you know, you only have one baby and you know, I don't understand. Like why your husband bought you this house? Why don't you take care of it? Like she would say these things to me. I was like, all right.
And comes a point where it's like, you know, she's seeking understanding but not doing it in a loving way, but
she was helping.
Yeah. And there comes like, a point at which like how much more can you explain, you know? It's like,
I wanted to throw her out of my house.
Yeah,
you know? Well, I actually one time I did,
and you could have
one time I did, and I don't even remember, it wasn't one of those, it was another conversation, but I was like, you need to leave my house.
Yeah. And I think it's okay, you know. Ideally, we kind of have a conversation first that looks like, you know, Mom, I really appreciate you being here, you know, but, you know, it really hurts when you say some of these things, you know. Can we kind of get to the bottom of that, you know, what's going on for you? This is where I stand. I want to be connected with you. I want your help. But I feel emotionally abandoned and disconnected from you in these moments. So if this continues, then it's not helpful anymore. And then you set the boundary. And if it keeps going on, it's really scary for us, again, back to like our desire for connection as human beings. You know, we're often afraid to set boundaries because we're afraid it will lead to disconnection. They'll break in the relationship when, you know, you and I know like healthy relationships can withstand boundaries. They can withstand disappointment. Even if maybe when you said, Mom, you got to leave, maybe you two had, you know, to sort of navigate that conflict for a while, you know, healthy relationships work through things. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really hard. A lot of us too with ADHD, I think, feel like we're not pulling our weight anyways. And so we have to try harder, or you know, we're already burdening someone. And so then we don't want to burden them further. And so if we say, please don't talk to me like that, that hurts my feelings, you know, I feel disconnected, then now we're creating even more of a problem. When, again, back to, we see ourselves as the problem in the first place, and now we're making it worse. So we don't have the right to say, hey, please don't talk to me like that. Yeah. And so I think it's no surprise in the ADHD clinical community that there are a lot of power imbalances in relationships with people with ADHD, I think, because of this. And because of this feeling like I'm the problem. And so then you just, you're vulnerable to not sticking up for yourself.
Well, it's so funny you say that, because, you know, from the time I was diagnosed in like sixth grade, it was always my, like my mom always talks about Elizabeth's problems. Problems. Uh-huh. And so, you know, talk about boundaries, and even I carried my lack of boundary. I was never taught like good communication strategies and like stuff from my parents. So when I got married, you know, and I talk to women about this kind of stuff all the time, we carry over some of this stuff.
Oh yeah.
Communication issues and the boundary issues, a lot of boundary issues into our relationships.
Yep.
And my husband has always thought it was so funny that he just doesn't get it. Like when I feel like I'm a huge burden.
Yeah.
You know, my birthday was a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, can I buy this bathing suit that I want? You know, buy it. You know, he doesn't, and I always feel like I'm this burden. Like I'm the one with the issues. I'm the one who has all the problems in our family. And that's why our son has problems. And it's the funniest thing, because it's me. It's not him.
Yep.
And I'm very lucky, because he's always like, what are you talking about? Like, just stop. Like, he's like, just stop. But I talk to a lot of women who don't have understanding partners. I've heard some stories that really freaked me out, like stuff that it's not always men, but I'm gonna say men have said to their wives that I'm just like, I don't know how you live like that with no support, with no like, do you get this in your practice? Have you heard?
Oh, a lot. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people have partners who don't get it. And, you know, unfortunately, maybe have some issues of their own that get in the way of being able to, you know, be open and open-hearted to receive some information, education, resources, support, guidance to work through it. There are a lot of great spouses, you know, that come in too. I mean, I had someone come in and say, you know, I don't get it, but I want to. I wish I could live in her shoes for a day. Can you please help me? Like, she tells me and I know, but like, and you know, that was really validating also for her to hear that how much he wanted to understand. But then there are a lot of people in the world who don't really believe in ADHD, who think that because it's, you know, behavioral and it's invisible, that it's a character issue and you just need to try harder and you're not trying hard enough or you don't care. And if you become very entrenched in those beliefs, then good luck with couples counseling. You know, you've got to be able to be open to some influence to learn some new information and have some new perspective and learn some new ways of relating. Every relationship is a dance, you know? And so oftentimes when we have a conflict, there's like the content of it, you know, oh, you said you'd do the dishes, you didn't do the dishes. But then there's the process, there's what's underneath. You know, Sue Johnson, who's big in emotionally focused couples therapy, she integrates a lot of John Gottman's work, who I also highly recommend. You know, she talks about the soft underbelly of the problem. And, you know, what does it mean? What does it mean to you that I forgot to do the dishes? What meaning are you creating out of that? What am I experiencing in that moment? Am I going back to my parents chastising me, you know, or feeling less than or bullied? What else is going on? Because now we're both having other stuff that has nothing to do with the dishes come into play in that moment. And so those conflicts often need to be worked through with a lot of care. And with ADHD, those moments happen, you know, a lot, over, especially over time. I think someone with ADHD are drawn to partners who are a little more rigid, who are very steady, who seem very secure, predictable, really like have everything together. But if you're not careful over time, if that person doesn't have, you know, it, those traits balanced out with some softness, then they can really fall into this very controlling parental role. Other women are attracted to partners who maybe demonstrate some of the same chaos that they feel on the inside, you know, or maybe, you know, date or marry people who aren't good to them, because it kind of mirrors their own relationship with themselves or what they've experienced earlier in life. And then other people with ADHD, you know, don't fall into either category. But I think in any relationship, you're always trying to, it's always a balance. It's always a balancing act in terms of like working out the dynamic. It's a moving thing, you know, love is a verb, right? ADHD can play into relationships in so many ways. And
that's really what we spend the most time in my groups talking about, is the relationships with our primary partners and those, the beliefs about who we should be, who we actually are.
Right.
And what the world and what we expect from ourselves. And yeah, it's really, really complicated. And I know, doesn't the subtitle of your book have the words untangling?
The first version of our book was going to be called Untangled.
I feel like the word appears somewhere.
It does. It's in a lot of our presentation titles. Okay. And it's in the book quite a bit, because we talk about an untangling process. The title is a Radical Guide for Women with ADHD, Embrace Neurodiversity, Live Boldly, and Break Through Barriers. It's actually a guidebook. They wanted a workbook, and we said, you can please get the word work out of here. That's not going to work for us. So it's a guidebook. It's short chapters with information and a lot of exercises and things like that and resources. But we do talk about untangling, yeah, from your own stuff and from other people's stuff, you know. I think when you live with a chronic condition, an invisible difference like ADHD, you have all of these microaggressions that happen in your life because of your differences and your struggles. You know, from a teacher saying you don't need accommodations, to a parent saying, what's wrong with you? Why can't you just do that? To a new friend saying, wow, I really thought you had your life together, to, you know, all of these things. And it's hard not to internalize that over the years. And so there's a lot of small emotional traumas and wounds that women incur, and they just kind of build up and they get buried. And when you have that, I think anyone is more vulnerable than to getting stuck in relationships and relational dynamics, whether that's with friends, romantic partners, the workplace, family of origin, that are unhealthy and unhelpful. It's important to look at, where do our stories come from? And what are some of those early experiences that keep coming into play now? When my partner says you didn't do the dishes, am I going back to third grade? Am I going back to my first primary partner who did or said something? Am I going back to my father, my mother, my sibling, my teacher? How old am I in this moment? What am I feeling in this moment? And does it have anything to do really with what's going on here? And maybe the answer is yes. You know, maybe your partner does need to work on their delivery, you know, soften their startup, how they talk about it. Maybe they do need more education. Maybe you two do need more of a plan. But maybe your partner in that moment was, you know, hey, babe, what happened? You know, I noticed you said you were going to do this and you didn't. Like, what's going on? Well, someone with ADHD, given their day, could relate to that in very different ways. If they've had a good day, they may be fine. But if they've had a stressful day and they've had a day where they feel trapped in a shame spiral, it could, you know, the word, why didn't you, is those are the only words they hear. And then you go straight back. So that's where all of the deeper work is, truly. You know, and I can't recommend couples therapy enough for couples where ADHD is in the mix, but it's also important to have someone who understands ADHD. So they're not, you know, saying, oh, these behaviors are due to something, you know, else in your subconscious, when really it's due to ADHD. So that can be hard to find, but even like couples groups, ADDD.org, they have online virtual support groups for partners, non-ADHD partners and partners. And I think Melissa Orlov and Ned Hollowell did some online course content a while ago for couples, I believe.
I know she
I don't know what else is out there.
She does. You're right. Melissa Orlov does have a few couples.
Yeah. Courses,
I think. Yeah. Well, I was going to ask, like, is this something that basically requires at some point probably therapy?
Yeah.
I think the biggest, well, it depends on the situation, but I think right. The biggest barrier tends to be, well, some people have weird, talk about beliefs, some people have weird beliefs about therapy. And then sometimes you're in a relationship where your partner just isn't interested in that.
Yeah.
But I think you could pursue something on your own.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you only need like, really one person in the system to make a shift. The rest of the system is forced to change. If you are consistent and stick to your changes and pour your energy into yourself and, you know, creating your best life and a loving relationship with yourself, you start setting new boundaries, the rest of the system is going to change. You might get pushback though at first and some change back messages, like go back to the way it was, and you've got to work through that. And that's why like a therapist is really helpful. I think ADHD informed therapy is really important. I love coaching. I really believe in coaching. You know, I've done both therapy and coaching myself, and I integrate some coaching into obviously therapy because that's ADHD informed therapy does that. But if you don't do some of the deep dive and dig into some of the self-talk, the self-concept issues, the relational triggers, if you don't work around some of that, you're going to stay stuck. You know, you can have the perfect organizing system and time management system, but you're going to keep running into problematic encounters and feeling bad, you know, if some of this underlying stuff isn't resolved. You won't have the best setup for success when you do some of the more active coaching. You know, another myth is that therapy is all about the past. That's not true. We do talk about the past some, but we talk about the past in terms of how it impacts your present so that you can notice it's the past and not the present, and you can make some shifts now. But you know, especially ADHD informed treatment is uses a lot of here and now. And so, yeah, we talk about the past, but it's as context. And a lot of people are really afraid they'll go into therapy and talk about their mother for an hour when, you know, if you're with a good therapist that really gets ADHD, it's not that way. It's much more integrated, I think, than people say. And it hurts me to hear coaches say, oh, you know, therapists talk about the past. We work on the present. And it could not be farther from the truth. It's just different, and both are good. I think it's important to have a lot of different tools in your toolbox. And so at different points of your life, maybe you know, a coach is helpful. Maybe, you know, more of a general coach is helpful. Maybe later in life you have a career transition, you want someone who specializes in workplace. You know, a lot of great folks in our field with that. Maybe you have some couples counseling. Maybe you have some individual therapy. Whatever, you talk to a spiritual, you know, pastor or a rabbi or, you know, whatever. You know, there are multiple paths to healing. But we do have to do the work. It goes back to the gift curse thing, you know. We can't just call it a gift and pretend like we don't have a responsibility for growth either and put it all off.
That's a really good point, actually, because I've sort of come to that realization that not everybody at all times is going to want to do this kind of work.
Right.
I just happen to be in a season where I'm interested in this stuff and the women in my community are really interested in it. Mm-hmm. But, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and that's part of the ADHD problem, I think, is
right.
we're not always ready to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not. I mean, sometimes we're just not there, or we just can't do the deep dive, as you said. We just can't.
But the in between is actually where a lot of important growth happens underground, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like there's a book called The Way of Transition, I think. Mm. It's an old book. I really like it because it talks about the importance of going through periods where you have no clue and you're on the fence and you don't really feel like much is happening. You feel ambivalent, and that those periods are just as important as the active periods of growth.
Yeah.
Maybe even more so. Like that's part of the process, and that's okay.
Okay. I have one more.
Go ahead.
I have one more question for you. Yeah. So when you conceived of this book, I mean, what do you want to do? Do you want to do speaking engagements? Do you want to have a larger conversation about this kind of stuff? Yeah. Book clubs? I don't know. What's the ultimate?
I don't know. You know, it seems right now like the sky's the limit. Like there are ideas coming out of the woodwork and there's so much interest. I think it's a really apt time for this book to come out. I think it's really an important conversation to have around changing how we view neurodiversity. And so Sari and I really want to broaden the conversation. We want to help women with ADHD certainly understand themselves better and as, you know, start to view themselves as whole and move through the shame and really embrace, take hold of their lives. And this book has the activity so that you can take it to a coach, you can take it to a therapist who isn't super ADHD specialized, or you can do it on your own. You can do it with a group of friends. You could do it at a peer support group. And you can do some of that work because specialists aren't just, you know, all over the place or anything. It's hard to find. So we want that, but we really want to expand the conversation for professionals. I think a lot of folks are still up against a lot of stigma and judgment, even from their own physicians. Mm-hmm. You know, even a lot of therapists don't get it and make very well-intentioned mistakes. So we want to do some training in that area. We want to open up the conversation really to say like, hey, strategies are necessary, but they're not sufficient. You know, if we're not talking about self-concept, shame, and emotional regulation, we're not dealing with the issue. We're not really dealing with ADHD. We are taking a band-aid approach to symptoms. We are not helping people live better lives because we're not letting them get in touch with their authentic selves. We're trying to paint over their symptoms. Yeah, we want to manage symptoms, but we want you to manage your symptoms while you see yourself as a whole person. Continue to live your life, not take yourself out of it, trying to just, you know, get by every day. So a big part of it is the professional work. Obviously we both do a lot of speaking, you know, and writing and so forth. And I don't know. I don't know where the wind is going to take us. She and I are both at different points in our careers too, you know? So, you know, we're in this beautiful period of like overlap and things, but, you know, she just got back from the ADHD conference in Nice, France, and that was lovely and so wonderful for her, you know.
I loved her photos.
Yes, after, you know, 30 years of this work, you know, I mean, damn it, she gets to go to Nice and sit there for a week and sit in cafes, and I think that's, you know, where she's at is, but she's still as active as ever. Sari's someone who I don't think is ever really going to step away from trying to evolve this conversation on women with ADHD, and me either. I think both of us also want to broaden the conversation to be about, you know, ADHD as a spectrum, about neurodiversity. I think gender roles and expectations are important to talk about. And at the same time, I know men also feel very stifled by roles and expectations, and people who are queer or non-binary have certainly tons of oppression every day that they deal with on top of it. It's another intersection of oppression and stigma and identity, you know, issues. So I don't know. I'm very curious about where the conversation is going to go in terms of gendered discussion. Mm-hmm. It's like we have to stay gendered because, for instance, hormones, right? Because hormones, huge problem.
I just turned 40, and please tell me you're not younger than me. Are you younger than me?
Only slightly.
Okay. Okay, I'll accept that answer. I just turned 40 and I'm telling you, yeah. Hormones become a thing.
Yeah. Like, huge. 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 Yeah. So, you know, I'm curious too. I think we're both curious about the gender conversation, how much that's changing and will continue to change from Sari's first book, Women with ADHD, you know, 25 years ago to now to, you know, 10 years from now, what will we be talking about? We're still really curious about that. But I don't know. I mean, I think what I would like to see too is people helping people, community, just like you, you know, and what you're working on, what the community you're building. So, and I think there's room for so many different ways of doing that.
Yeah, I do. I think people need community and social support. And I think, again, this is just a conversation that's important and needs to happen. You're doing such great work. Like I said, I believe I said this at the very beginning. There are so many things that are hard to put into words and hard to explain. Yeah. And I think this book perhaps can help some of us start the conversation.
Yeah.
Right. You know, push us in that direction a little bit.
Yeah.
And where can people hear more from you if they're interested in you?
Yeah.
When they hear this?
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram at ADHD_doc, D-O-C. You can also just, I think it's under Dr. Michelle Frank. I have a Facebook page, Dr. Michelle Frank. But you can also follow us on ADHDRadicalGuide.com. Again, this is one of those things that's changed over the course of publication. RadicalADHDGuide.com. And on there's links to our book stuff. There's a blog. We also are just starting a Psychology Today blog. And we have tons of webinars, more podcasts, talks, conferences coming up this fall. At sarisolden.com, you can sign up for our newsletter. We keep it pretty like infrequent. We, you know, that's just really updates of our talks or events that you can go to, so as not to overwhelm you anymore. So if you want to be kept abreast of those things, that's another good way to do so.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the conference because I'm trying to convince people, you know, that it's not just for doctors, that it's fun.
Right.
Show up. I don't know.
Right.
I'm always talking about the conference.
Well, so, you know, and I think you and I were talking about maybe doing something together there. Last time you and I talked, we talked a bit about that, maybe a little, I don't know, you know, ideas. But the past 2 or 3 years, and I'm going to do it again this year, I do a women's track, and I do things like a mindful coloring session, women's just support group stuff. We've done journal reflection sessions. We've done happy hours. Certainly, that does not necessarily need to mean alcohol, you know, coffee hours. We do a unity lunch every year now, which is an opportunity for women at the conference to just get together. And oftentimes I have a lot of the experts drop by. So, you know, can just chat with Terry Matlin real quick or whatever. You know, there's a lot going on now at the conference in terms of enrichment activities. I mean, there's morning meditation. There's like either yoga, walking, or kickboxing, you know, at random times. There's ADA does a lot of their virtual groups, do live meetups, things like that. So there's also a sobriety support group that meets during the conference since, you know, for a lot of folks, connection happens around the bar, you know, but we also, you know, with ADHD, you know, a lot of us don't drink too much. What else? There's just tons of new enrichment activities that are happening. And I think that's really transformative, being around people who get it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the conference is great fun and I plan to be totally obnoxious about
awesome.
The book you have coming out.
Thank you.
About the book you have coming out and the conference and all the fun stuff. And I think, yes, we're all going to have this conversation and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. I look forward to it.
Thanks for recording this.
Yeah.
It's super fun. I hope we didn't go off on too many, you know.
We probably did, but you know, that's That's the whole thing.
In order to produce great content, I feel like we need to just talk about the stuff.
Yeah.
It's not always pretty stuff. I mean, no. Yeah, it's fine.
It's fine. ADHD and beyond, you know, it's.
Yeah.
Thank you again to Dr. Frank for having this long, but I think really important and really interesting conversation with me. I will link to as many things as I can remember us talking about in the show notes. And if you like this sort of conversation, if this is the stuff that gets you excited, then check out the ADHD Enclave. It is a place for women like us to talk about the things that you just can't talk about on social media. Stick around. Good things are coming. It's summer. And like I always say, we are stronger together.